Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Hey everybody, thank you for clicking on the debut episode of Lights, Camera, Podcast. I'm Jeff Flo, and we are very excited that you are about to listen to the first episode, just a small part of a bigger project coming from myself, Barstool Ken Jack, and Trill Ballins. We're going to bring you much more than just reviews and much more than just a podcast, video content, blog content. It's all coming in the future. But for now, listen, enjoy, and please tweet us, comment, message us your feedback, your thoughts, and any ideas you have for future content you want to hear us discuss. Because, hey, this is going to be a common man movie podcast. We're not going to have snobby reviews. We're going to grade everything on a very strict 1 through 100 scale. Make it simple, easy to see our opinions. Heck, we might be wrong, you might be wrong, we might be right, you might be right. Again, we're not going to be snobby. We just want to have fun with it. So please, enjoy the podcast and let us know what you think. We have much more coming in the future. One housekeeping note, we did have to bleep out some swear words because of someone's, I won't mention any names, could be me, someone's employer. So just that's why you hear some bleeps. Enjoy the podcast, everybody.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What? We've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights Movie Podcast, week 34 of the movie season. Jeff Lowe alongside Barstool Ken Jack and Trill Ballins. And we have a lot of shit to talk about this week. Not just one bad movie, but a plethora of awful movies. And let's start off with a review of the Emoji Movie. Trill Ballins, did your wife file for divorce after you made her watch this movie?
I told her the other night that we had to watch it again to do more research on this. And she got pissed. She got mad at me. So I'm not there yet. My wife has not left me yet. But it was a struggle on a relationship to get through this movie. So to all the listeners, we do it for you guys. We sacrifice watching these crappy movies so you guys don't have to.
It's not just bad. It's stupid. And that's, I think, where it lost me more than anywhere else. There's so many stupid things with this movie, but you want to start out with the score. I gave it a 2 out of 100, a base of 0, and I gave it 2 points. 1 point because, you know what, I felt bad for the people who animated the movie. And another point for pacing because it was a very quick movie. It's over quick. You don't realize it at first because it's so bad, but I think it's only like an hour and 20 minutes maybe.
Yeah, if that.
It's merciful.
And there's actually, funny enough, the one that we watched, there's a shitty Adam Sandler animated short beforehand where he's playing Dracula from those like Transylvania movies. Yeah. So it really punches you in the face twice. It's a real quick punch to start and then a knockout blow, really, which is the Emoji Movie. So I gave it a 2 out of 100.
I was going to say, I liked the Sandler short more than I liked probably the entire Emoji Movie. And, you know, if you get outclassed in animation by fucking an Adam Sandler Dracula short, I think you've probably done something wrong.
I gave it a 5 out of 100, 1 point for being a movie. So just, it's a movie, a bunch of people got together and made it, so congrats to them. and 4 points for not being that offensive when they could have been offensive at many different opportunities with a lot of different emojis. And other than that, some movies you watch it and infuriates you because it's so bad. This is just infuriating because it's devoid of anything. It's devoid of heart. It's devoid of feeling. It's devoid of being good. They came together and produced the most. It's like this. It's the Carnival Cruise Lines movies. It's so inoffensive. It tries to have a message. And at the end of it, you feel nothing. So it's not enraging in that sense that it's so bad. It's enraging from a standpoint that there's no point, just no point.
And I think before you give your rating, Ken Jack, let's just say normally when we do these reviews, we'll do a non-spoiler section for most of the review. I don't give a shit if we're spoiling the movie for you, to be honest. If you're that stupid where this is, you're like, oh, I really wanted to see the Emoji Movie. I just don't, it's just not worth it. So we're really going to spoil everything for you at this point. We're going to kind of tell you what happens because even the plot doesn't make much sense and what it does revolve around is absurd. So yeah, just a heads up. This is a complete spoiler review because I just don't think we care.
I can't believe they killed Gene in the third act. That was a little dark for a kid's movie, but
real, yeah, George R. R. Martin twist on Emoji Movie, killing off all your favorite characters such as shit emoji and broom emoji and high five.
The poop emoji had a dinner for everybody and locked the doors and slaughtered all the other emojis while the Reigns of Castamere played. It was really gruesome.
Some might say Sir Patrick Stewart's best role as the shit emoji.
The best part about that is the way they introduced the character were so Gene is a meh emoji. His parents are also meh emoji. So when they see that he's having trouble just being a meh emoji, they say we need a private place to talk. So they take him into a locked bathroom. And you're like, why do you need to go into a locked bathroom? Well, guess what? It's just so you can have the poop emoji and his son come out from one of the stalls, simply to introduce the poop emoji. And it was that point, like 4 minutes in, that I knew we had something special on our hands.
To follow up on the rating, I gave it a 5 as well. I gave it the pacing and the pacing point and probably default point for being a movie. My other 3 points are awarded just for from a technical standpoint, it's not terrible. Like from an animation standpoint, it's not like it's shittily done animation where it's like pixelated or anything. So I think technically it's well done, but pretty much every single stage of it top to bottom is literally maybe the worst movie I've seen in my entire life.
It's just so, and we'll talk about the plot quick. Basically, I mean, the movie revolves around two things, Dropbox and a horny teenager. That's really that's what it comes down to. So basically,
Dropbox is the Chekhov's gun of the movie. Yeah,
it is. So the kid, there's a kid in school. He's like, I think the way they say age, he's like 15 or 16. He gets a text from a girl he likes and he replies to her. He goes to send the meh emoji to this girl he likes, and Gene, the meh character who likes to be himself and express different faces, screws up at his first attempt at being an emoji sent through a phone. And for some reason, the emoji like really offends the girl. So the guy is like now screwed because this one emoji looks weird. And throughout the movie, they have to figure out a way to either have Gene fix himself into just being the meh emoji. And he does this by finding Anna Faris's character, who is run off from the regular Textopolis Emojiville. That's Textopolis is the name of the city. I'm sure we'll get into that. And she wants to go to the cloud, in which they can't just say go to the cloud. It has to be through Dropbox. Through the whole process, in the end, she decides not to go to the cloud. Gene doesn't get fully fixed and can express themselves, and they overthrow the evil Smiler character, played by Maya Rudolph, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they overthrow her, and it's a big, happy family. And that's really how – oh, and of course, the kid – saves his phone from being memory wiped at the Apple store because the girl ends up texting him back for some odd reason. And then he sends a fun emoji and they, I assume, go and have sex with each other at the end. That's basically the assumption that I drew from all of that.
And the main theme of the movie, because they have to try to inject the fake heart into it, like they're trying to be a Pixar movie, is that it's okay to be more than one thing, or it's okay to be yourself. However, the movie's so stupid that I'm not sure that I took anything away from it, because Gene could be any emoji he wanted, but what it ended up being on the computer output is an emoji that changes between a lot of different emojis, and it ends up being this really popular emoji. So he ends up being popular, right? So the main part I take away is being popular is more important than anything. So what kind of message are we sending the kids here?
Yeah, it's like everyone is still, you need to be on your phone to be cool. Otherwise, you're an outcast loser who everyone hates, because you can't send this new, Gene's new iteration of emoji, which is like it switches between 10 different emojis at once.
Which really isn't that cool. Yeah. Let's be honest. It's the entire point of an emoji is to convey a certain feeling at one point in time. So you have this emoji that can be anything, and it's just stupid. It doesn't make any sense. But again, that comes in and plays perfectly with the entire point of the movie, which is that it's stupid and doesn't make any sense. He thinks his phone is fixed too. He had all these issues, and because he gets this emoji that can change between 15 different emojis, he takes it off of the wiping station or the deleting station at the fake Apple store. The movie starts off, though, like you're saying, with TJ Miller basically explaining the entire emoji universe. And what infuriated me is that the text app that they live in is called Textopolis, which, oh, you cannot have come up with a worse name than Textopolis. And during this opening sequence, you get introduced to these other emojis, which are just the corniest jokes you can imagine. For example, a shrimp emoji appears, and guess what? He has a Crocodile Dundee Australian accent talking about throwing shrimp on the Barbie. Obvious joke, but if I'm a parent sitting there, I'm slapping my head.
One of the bigger questions I had with it is, like, why are they all sort of afraid of being wiped? Like, if he gets a new phone, does he not still have emojis? Or did they, like, literally kill off an entire family, like a bloodline of emojis? Like, how long did he have this phone that he had like multiple generations of emojis in existence?
If I were an emoji in this movie, I would want to die as soon as possible. I would pray for the sweet release of this delete at the fake Apple store. But it does bring in this interesting point is, you know, there are billions of phones out there. Are they all, you know, are millions of emojis being slaughtered every day?
Because mass emoji murder.
Yeah. Beyond Alex's phone, I think that was his character. Everyone else has a phone. So, I mean, it really does set up a dark plot point for the expanded universe and explanation for these emojis.
And there's actually a point where the smiley character is flossing her teeth and holds up a really tasteful hanging reference. Did you notice that part?
Yes.
Like
I did not. Wait, go through that one again. I did not remember that part.
Not just murder, brutal murder. Because while the main villain, the smiley emoji, is flossing her teeth, she ties the floss a certain way. And the way the floss is shown on camera, it's in front of the man emoji's face, implying that she may hang him.
They made a hangman's noose out of the floss.
Yes,
there is a hanging reference.
It frames Gene's face perfectly, and it really stands out as being a very dark point. It doesn't fit in.
So that's another thing I didn't understand about this movie. Why does Gene have a regular human name, and like High Five has a human name, and then other ones are just like broom emoji or poop
right.
emoji? But some guys are like good enough to get names.
Oh no, they do have names. I forget what they are. They didn't do a good job of explaining it. And his parents are an entire other podcast. They serve as the B plot for this movie.
Yeah.
They decided to make meh emojis, really boring characters, into the entire B plot. And Stifler's mom plays one, and I forget who the other is played by, but they'll go off into these entire sequences and they question their own relationship. And it's so pointless because they talk in monotone. And I'm thinking, how are kids liking this right now?
He's actually played by comedian Stephen Wright. That's who plays.
That's right.
Yeah, I just looked it up. It's Mel Meh and Mary Meh.
There's so much stuff about this movie that doesn't make sense. And we're the only ones brave enough to really tackle it right now.
There's a lot of attempts to pull millennials in here. At least young high school kids, but it kind of feels like that meme with Steve Buscemi from 30 Rock. What is it? How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah.
Like, they get a lot of those moments. Like, they say hashtag blessed by Felicia. It was so ridiculously out of touch. I mean, it misses the mark so terribly. Even the Spotify app, the songs they played, Cheerleader by Omi, Whip,
yeah.
Watch Me Whip. It was 2017. Those are songs from 2 years ago, at least.
Well, the best part about that Spotify scene is they have a digital whale come through to do some like whale watching, because the whole conceit is that they're in the stream and so they're on water. But the way they explain the whale is that it was a song from Alex's presentation he did at school. Like, he recorded a whale song. And, you know, why would that be on Spotify? I mean, maybe it's on his local drive, but yeah, you're right. And I think the best explanation of this, like the how do you do, fellow kids, it all goes back to Sony, and it goes back to the Sony leaks, because we saw those emails and we saw how, I don't want to say incompetent, but they were out of touch. And the one that stands out is there's this hilarious email, and the subject is Spidey Thought. And it's an exec, I think, emailing another exec talking about some thoughts for the next Spider-Man movie. And it starts off with saying, we're seeing a lot of trend with millennials who are really into extreme sports, like the color run, hot power yoga, which I've never heard of, veganism, which is not an extreme sport. And then they go into millennials will also post NBD on their social media, as in no big deal. Then it goes into saying EDM. It'd be great to get Spider-Man into some EDM music, because that's a defining music. Snapchat just launched a story. Can we incorporate Spider-Man into this? So there's a bunch of thoughts on a Sony Spider-Man movie trying to appeal to millennials. And then you get the Emoji Movie, which has a lot of these things incorporated into it, like the Spotify stream. And I'm just blanking out right now, but it is an out of touch movie. It makes me feel bad for the prestigious Caltech, Cal Institute of the Arts or whatever graduate who's a top animator in his class and gets this great project. And it ends up being this big steaming pile of emoji crap.
You got to remember, though, this is the same exact network that made the Angry Birds movie, which was a real thing. People kind of forget about it, but that happened at one point.
I will never forget about the Angry Birds movie. I will never forgive about the Angry Birds movie. I also watched that, and it also sucked.
I think one of the other big kind of swings and misses here is the fact that they didn't even have like the most subtle of nods to the purple pickle, the eggplant emoji, or the peach emoji, for at least the somewhat above like 12-year-old audience to make it somewhat bearable. Like, even the slightest and most subtle of nods would have been like somewhat funny, and they purposely did not include them.
Oh no, the eggplant emoji was in the reject emoji basement.
Exactly.
Which didn't make sense, because that is a highly used emoji.
So out of touch.
It's so out of touch.
There's a lot of MacGuffins and ex machinas in this whole entire movie. The first one, though, is they can't get through the firewall, I believe, because they don't know the password. And the thing that saves them is they figure out that the password is Alex, the guy who owns the phone. It's his crush's name, and they find it through an email. He was emailing his f-ing crush, not texting. They found it through a deleted or a saved draft email. That, I think, beyond everything, is the most out-of-touch thing. There is no way any kid at the age of 15 is emailing. Twitter is old to some people in high school, and let alone this kid is emailing his crush. And that's really what saves the whole movie. They look and they figure out he sends an email. And they find her name, and that's what the password is. Just the crush. No numbers or anything, just the crush's name.
But her emails, Jeff. But her emails.
Well, the best part about that scene was High Five goes into the deleted files, and it's almost an exact replica of Inside Out.
That's what I was about to fucking say. It's a fucking ripoff of Inside Out.
When that clown or whatever it was down there, and it's like, oh, I'll save you. And then they, you know, he pulls them out. But except High Five gets pulled out with, you know, gets saved from the trolls. But I'm like, the scene is so derivative of something we already seen. And Jeff, I think you said it best, or Ken Jack, I don't remember if you said it. It's just like this hideous combination of Inside Out and what was the other movie?
The Lego movie.
Yes, it tries to be both. It tries to, you know, have this rapid fire comedy by way of James Corden, and it tries to have this plot with a heart like a Pixar movie, and it fails because it's so sanitized.
It's almost a beat for beat ripoff of the two of them combined. I hate this movie, and I compare it to, there's a movie called Mac and Me, which is a ripoff of E.T. You should look it up. It's a great lookup on YouTube. And this also, that movie was laced with product placement as well. There's an entire dance number in McDonald's in the middle of Mac and Me.
Yes.
Where Ronald McDonald comes out and dances and shit. And that movie is a ripoff of E.T. in the same way this movie is a ripoff of Inside Out and Lego Movie. It's not exact, but it's so close that you know exactly what Sony was doing when they set this shit up.
The Mac and Me wheelchair scene, though, where the kid, yep. where the kid flies off the cliff and then Mac at the end, it kind of comes up and is like, oh! It's like a Tim Taylor Tool Time type noise. See, but that's great. Some movies are so bad, they give you scenes like that which are memorable because they're so awful. But the Emoji Movie is just so bland. There is nothing from the Emoji Movie that is even so bad it's like worth watching again. That's the most infuriating part about it to me. I mean, just give me a scene that is at least worth ridicule. Everything is just – it's just like they just poured hand sanitizer over – a combination of the Lego Movie and Inside Out.
The one thing that you said, I think, that made you most mad, though, was another kind of MacGuffin ex machina that helped move the plot was the piracy app, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who has a pirate? It's a piracy app. Yeah, like that's another Steve Buscemi. Like, how do you do, fellow kids? Alex is just like, oh, damn, let me go hit up my piracy app to get the latest Transformers movie review coming next week. And, that was a little plug for the podcast. Yeah. But no, there's not a piracy app. If there was a piracy app, it would be closed down. It doesn't make any sense.
It'd be great if they had like their, my son, he's 25 now, but he used to use LimeWire all the time. Let's use the LimeWire app.
Yeah, that's what that is. That's exactly what that is. Like, oh, remember when you guys used Napster? Let's put that in the movie.
Oh, that would have been great.
Except every song's like a Weird Al Yankovic song, like mistitled like it was on Kazaa.
There's just, again, there's no life to it. And that's what I think is the most upsetting thing about it. It's so cookie cutter and so clear that they're just trying to make money. And I think the Twitter bird was probably the worst part. The Twitter bird saving the day at the end of the movie was another one that is such, I mean, that's where Twitter's budget went, clearly, for the whole entire year.
Yeah, wait, I don't fucking get it still. Like, she could have summoned the Twitter bird at any single given point and had it fly here to Dropbox. And that's her entire goal for the entire movie, is she needs to get to Dropbox. And she just has this tool waiting that she just never uses until like the very end to go backwards.
It's the Lord of the Rings giant eagle debate.
Exactly.
For the Emoji Movie. I will say, though, another thing, I have a gigantic list of notes here, but I've learned from past podcast experience not to read jokes off a list. So one thing
shout
that.
Shout out to Reddit.
Yeah, shout out to Reddit. One thing that really, really pissed me off was crappy attempts at adult humor to appeal to adults like a Shrek movie would. An example of this is, so the emojis have to get scanned in when they get summoned, which is a horrible business model because, you know, make the technology work. So the smiley emoji says there's nothing better than getting scanned for the first time, which is just a tepid sex joke. It's just not even funny. And at least with the Shrek movie, they'll make the whole compensation joke about Lord Farquaad's castle or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny. This one was just not. Another one was there's some scene with like a pepperoni pizza getting splashed on somebody, but it gave him like pepperoni boobs. Do you guys remember that? I know you probably tried to blank it out from your memory, but it's just like little jokes like that that just were so stupid, and they tried to appeal to adults in the theater, but we all know the adults in the theater were already thinking about how much they hated their children for making them go see this movie.
I lied. Twitter did not pay the most money for this movie.
I forgot it. I blacked that one out entirely.
The Candy Crush scene was a solid 10 to 15 minutes. It was a huge point of that movie. And for some reason, while they're playing Candy Crush, the high five emoji, James Corden character, just ate so much food. And there's really no reason for it.
I guess they're trying to make a callback to James Corden being fat and, like, very transparently so.
The high five character probably was the worst character in the entire movie. It was one of those stereotypical comic relief characters that just did too much. Every line was a outdated cultural reference or a hashtag blessed or hashtag winning. Or then, you know, within 5 seconds, I think he said hashtag blessed and then bye Felicia.
He did.
Yeah. Why did he have a Band-Aid on his finger? Does the normal emoji have a Band-Aid? I never used the high five.
The high five emoji does not have a Band-Aid, but that was on there. And then there's other scenes you're talking about references. He referenced, like, you know, those old school little finger puppets you put on your fingers? Those, like, plastic, like, rubber monsters. You get them at one of those things you put in, like, 25 cents.
Chuck E. Cheese. You get, like, 5 tickets to Chuck E. Cheese, and you leave with a little dragon finger thing.
Great reference there, which I'm sure adults loved and kids loved as well.
Yeah, so was Talk to the Hand, that is one line when I saw the character. I'm like, they will 5,000. I'll put my life savings on that prop bet that he will say Talk to the Hand. And I think it was used like 5 minutes in to his introduction.
How bad do you think the voice actors felt when they went in to watch the footage while they recorded this?
I'm convinced Sir Patrick Stewart has to be cut out of the movie, because for the most part, he really isn't in it. But he was on the press junket, so he definitely bought into a lot of it. And he came on GMA, and he was talking about being the poop emoji, and he was giggling the entire time. But I guarantee you, he watched the first cut, and he knows that Logan is going to get some Oscar buzz this year. It was like, get me out of this fucking movie. Just let my two lines go through there. You know, should we wash our hands? That's the whole joke. And then just move on.
TJ Miller. Let's go into TJ Miller. He has, some people might say he's had a good year. Some people might say he's had a bad year. I thought he was great on Silicon Valley, but then he left the show. And this was his flagship summer product right after leaving Silicon Valley. And I got to say, it doesn't really set a good precedent. He had already been in the Yogi Bear movie.
Yeah,
I didn't as a voiceover. And now he's in this. And I can't really think right now what other voices he's been. I think he was in Big Hero 6.
Yeah, he technically won an Oscar for Big Hero 6. Oh,
Oscar winning TJ Miller. He didn't sound like he enjoyed recording this movie from his performance as the character, but it's also hard to tell, because when TJ Miller plays a character, he's playing TJ Miller. So it was hard for me to really understand if he really bought into this role or not. I'd have to say no.
TJ Miller is so like expert at doing sort of deadpan, and like, this should have been, now I don't want to say Chris Pratt, because I like Chris Pratt too much, but this should have been a Chris Pratt role. And like, where it's just, and that would have been the great, like, just crux of it taking over for like, just stealing Lego Movie outright, completely.
I did go on YouTube and I found some deleted scenes from TJ Miller recording clips from the Emoji Movie. So let me just play them right now and see what you guys think. But I don't want to be just a meh emoji.
I like the depth of it. You can really.
Do you think Emoji Movie will win for both sound editing and mixing, or just one of them at the Oscars?
I would say it's probably going to win an animation.
Oh my God. The animation was good.
I have not seen a movie that missed the mark so bad in a very long time. And not the sense of a bad movie, because I've seen some worse movies, but this just missed every potential thing it was trying to achieve completely.
I think TJ Miller can still sort of rebound from this. The one comparison I have to his casting in this was when I saw it, it reminded me of when I saw, what's her name? April Ludgate getting, or Aubrey Plaza getting casted into the Grumpy Cat Worst Christmas Ever movie. And I remember thinking, like, this is her first role out of Parks and Rec, and I'm going to fucking hate it. And she's going to bomb and crash and burn, which it did. But she kind of rebounded in a huge way, so I have high faith in him.
Dirty Grandpa. Yeah, she was great in Dirty Grandpa. Remember, Bad Grandpa is the one with Johnny Knoxville. Dirty Grandpa is the one with Robert De Niro. It's an important distinction to make.
That should be like a trilogy set with like The Intern and like another De Niro movie.
He should just do the Grandpa trilogy. It's like Dirty Grandpa, Reformed to Grandpa, Nice Grandpa.
Oh my God. So, I mean, we've really ripped this movie in probably too many ways. Again, it's a movie for kids, so we've probably taken it completely out of what it should be. But I hold firm on the fact that it was still a shitty kids movie. I think I've run out of things. The only thing I will say I give it credit for, I only counted 8 poop or vomit jokes the entire movie. That was shocking. I expected at least 15 to 20 poop jokes. We didn't get that many. So a tip of the hat to the Emoji Movie on that one.
Did anyone get kicked in the crotch?
I didn't notice that.
I see. Part. Yeah. So, okay. At least they stayed away from that. I for sure thought James Corden's character would get kicked in the palm, which is basically his crotch. And there he'd be like, oh, me crotch or something. Something stupid like that. Jailbreak is an infuriating character. It is like a,
Anna Faris's character.
Anna Faris's character, she's a hacker, so she has purple hair and a beanie. And, you know, it's also, I think, when she does her hacking scenes, they have like the cliche, like terminal entry granted. When she's about to hack, she says something like, let me go hack into this. And it's like the perfect Anna Faris character, because she does a lot of bad movies. So I could see her being the most happy with this movie. I can't fault her for taking that paycheck, but the most least surprising thing about this character is that when you knock off her purple hair and the beanie, she is a princess emoji. So surprise, she's kind of like Jean. And guess what? They force a completely unnecessary romantic subplot into this movie because we haven't suffered enough.
It costs $50 million to make. I gave it a 2 out of 100. Ken Jack gave it a 5, and so did Trill Bond. So they just beat the combined 10 out of 300. If you combine our scores, we gave it a 13 out of 300. But guess what? Joke's on us. Budget resulted in $144 million to the box office.
Fuck.
And then forever, how much money they got on product placement.
Well, they spent $50 million on it, but we don't know how much they had to spend on employee assistance and mental health for the people who made the movie. Just like general, you know, are you guys okay? Like, I'm sorry we had to go through this. But they made a lot of money, which in 2017 is the most important thing you can do.
So going from the Emoji Movie, which is laced in product placement top to bottom, to a series of movies, which I believe are funded on product placement. And we're talking about Happy Madison Sandler movies. And we had this thought. What if Happy Madison movies were brought together like Marvel and DC movies, and there was an Avengers made to fight villains from these same movies? So we built our own Happy Madison cinematic universe based off of all of his films, Adam Sandler's, from Billy Madison to Deuce Bigelow to The Longest Yard, Paul Blart, Pixels, Jack and Jill, and more. Some real cinematic winners. So we all picked our own teams, and there are some rules here. You could pick 6 Avengers, so matching up with the regular Avengers, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Hulk, and I think some of us tried or attempted to match some up. A leader of the group like Nick Fury. You could pick max 3 Adam Sandler characters. Everyone else had to be one of his friends. And then you had to pick a main villain and then 3 sub-villains, so much like Thanos and then Loki and all those other ones from Marvel movies, and then make a plot out of it. With you, Ken Jack, who are your picks for the to be the leaders of the Happy Madison cinematic universe?
All right, so right off the bat, I kind of have, I think, a hot take for my leader of the Avengers of the Happy Madison universe. My leader will be Satan from Little Nicky as a sort of Nick Fury counterpart, because I think he's kind of a classic sort of anti-hero vibe to him, and he has like the sort of traits of a leader. And, you know, he has the previous experience with bad guys. You know, he knows how they operate. And in part of the plot, it's good because it kind of loops everything together, as I'll move into. My version, I tried, like we were saying, to match him up to Avengers characters. And my first would be Bobby Boucher as the Hulk. He is the superhuman strength. He's dating the badass woman. Sort of a dumbass when it comes to relationships. It fits together almost too perfect. And then matching up with that, I got Vicky Valancourt, his love interest from The Waterboy, as Black Widow. And then I kind of threw in Pistachio Disguisey. I didn't have a comparison from Avengers. Ooh, great to put character. Great character. He's a master of disguise. It's not really an Avengers comparison, but he's sort of like Mystique from X-Men. If they're a little sexier than Mystique, probably. Then I have Zohan as, I guess, Hawkeye. I don't really know that there's a direct comparison either, but he can throw knives and shit and is sort of superhumanly strong. They don't really, you know, tell you too much in Zohan why he's so crazy strong and can, like, jump from 20 stories up and land with no problem. But again, we're in the Happy Madison universe, so. And then I have Longfellow Deeds as Iron Man, with Emilio from the movie as Jarvis. And he's a rich guy. He's he's good.
You went deep on this one. We even have a Jarvis in here.
Yeah, I had a Jarvis subcasting. So he's a rich guy. He can beat people up, sort of. And then I have Eddie Plant from Pixels. And again, it's sort of buying into the anti-hero vibe that a lot of the Avengers get, like Iron Man and all them. And for my bad guys, the leader of which I have Adrian from Little Nicky. So it kind of loops it back into the plot. He's probably the most evil of the actually evil of all the characters from the Sandler universe. And he's really smart and cunning and all that fun stuff. And then I have the aliens from Pixels as my first sub bad guys. I didn't really have any comparison to them other than they're probably, again, one of the only villainous characters from the Sandlerverse. And then I have Phantom from Zohan, one of the most insanely racist characters I think ever composed in history. So, and then I have James Kent, who is kind of the unknown bad guy from Paul Blart Mall Cop, the indescript, like, SWAT corrupted guy. He's just like a sort of mercenary captain sort dude. And so for my
plot, Bobby Cannavale, right?
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale. And so for my plot, Adrian wants to release the aliens from Pixels from hell upon to Earth, but he needs to find two balls that attach to a giant shaft of a key that are hidden across Earth, and when put together, form some sort of giant dick key. And then they show the gates of Tartarus, which I guess they will rename Fartarus, which is a giant butt. And the butthole is the keyhole. He enlists the Phantom, who springs James Kent from federal prison to help him. Bobby Boucher lives in Louisiana with Vicky, running a landscaping business called Bobby's Blowjobs, and he doesn't understand why he doesn't get any business. Pistachio Disguisey is in federal prison for impersonating the president to get free Burger King, sponsor number one. And the federal prison is run by Warden Dan Patrick for no real reason.
There you go. who's in a lot of these movies, Dan Patrick?
Yeah, exactly. Zohan is still cutting hair in New York, but he now works for Supercuts, sponsor number two. And a really rude customer says something mean to him. And so Zohan cuts a picture of him getting farted on or something onto his hair, and then he gets fired. Longfellow Deeds and Emilio are building a new location of their pizza restaurant chain called Slice Slice Baby, cameo number one, Vanilla Ice, when they unearth one of the balls. So my last guy on the Avengers is going to be Eddie Plant, which is Peter Dinklage, a.k.a. Tyrion Lannister, who will be making ends meet at a mini golf place, which lets him use the arcade for free, which helps us tie in our terrible Sandler joke about little people saying something like, "Don't you call this regular golf?" Satan uncovers Adrian's plot, so Adrian banishes him to Earth so he can't stop him. Satan recruits Deeds, proving that he is Satan, by turning Deeds' slice of pizza into a cat's butthole right before he takes a bite. Then they go and recruit Bobby and Vicky. They go to prison to free Pistachio, but the warden says no, so Zohan eats a bunch of bad kebab or something and knocks out all the guards with a fart. Then they find Eddie at the mini golf place where they make their joke.
That was fantastic.
Oh my God, that was so deep.
I went so far into it.
This movie's going to get made in like a week. It's going to be on Netflix in October.
For reference, Ken Jack did say that this does sound like a actual Happy Madison movie, and I could not agree more. That the whole butthole key thing is spot on.
Like, that is even if it's not in this particular context, I feel the butthole key will come into play in some sort of Happy Madison film eventually. All right, Jeff, you want to do yours?
Yeah, so I'll go to mine here. My leader of the entire Avengers is going to be Dunkachino himself, Al Pacino from Jack and Jill. He was such an integral part of Jack and Jill, which is the shittiest movie of all time. And you'll understand why he needs to be the leader of this team. My Iron Man, my Tony Stark character, is Scuba Steve. My Captain America, the guy who kind of stands up for what's right, what's good. You know, he will kind of go out of his way to save everyone, is obviously Paul Blart from Paul Blart Mall Cop. The way he saved that mall was just so inspiring. My Thor character, due to his strength and ability to wield a weapon, is Happy Gilmore.
Oh, see, I could not figure out a way to get Happy Gilmore into this as much as I tried, but I like that.
Just imagine a lightning hockey stick. My Black Widow is Jill from Jack and Jill. Not to go too deep into Jack and Jill, because I could talk about Jack and Jill for 24 consecutive hours. Jill, for some odd reason, has superhuman strength in the movie Jack and Jill. Like, she is so strong. She benches like 300 pounds in that movie out of nowhere, and I think she knows some form of martial arts, so that just lines up really well with Black Widow. My Hawkeye, kind of secretive character who kind of slipped through sticky situations, is obviously Emilio the Butler, very sneaky from Mr. Deeds. And then I actually copied you with the Hulk. Bobby Boucher just seems to be the best Hulk character, because I mean, the character really is the Hulk. He gets angry and he starts destroying people.
Yeah.
The villain, I went a little. I'll get to the main villain in a second. The sub-villains are important characters who hate famous characters from Adam Sandler movies. One is the decathlon judge from Billy Madison, the one who says you're awarded no points, because he really hates him so much. Chuck Cedar from Mr. Deeds, the guy that loses all of the ability to take over Blake Media, gives all his money to Mr. Deeds. Bob Barker is the other sub-villain. Also because he's kind of got the brute force strength after beating the shit out of Happy Gilmore. But the main plot of the movie, it connects to the main villain. The main villain is the remote from Click.
Ooh.
And the plot of my movie is that the remote from Click read all of the reviews. It's a really meta movie, kind of dives like within itself, like breaks the fourth wall. The remote realizes how shitty all of these movies are. And now wants to rewind Adam Sandler's life and go back in time and make him anything other than an actor. And the person offended most by this is Al Pacino, who defends Jack and Jill to the death and wants to find a way to band together some of the good Adam Sandler characters, like Happy Gilmore, Scuba Steve, but also the shittiest, like, salt of the earth ones, Paul Blart, Jill. So that's really the main point, is that the remote has figured out and read the reviews for these shitty movies and wants to team up with Bob Barker, Chuck Cedar, and the decathlon judge, who hate the characters that make these movies as shitty as they are, and rewind Adam Sandler's life and basically make him into, I don't know, like an investment banker or some shit. We haven't really crafted much of a product placement map yet. We just know that Dunkin' Donuts will be heavily involved with Al Pacino's Dunkachino. I do see him pouring a really hot Dunkachino on the remote to end the movie.
Dunkachino! So
say hello to my chocolate blend. The best line from that movie. So yeah, so that's it. That's the Avengers lineup. Scuba Steve, Paul Blart, Happy Gilmore, Jill from Jack and Jill, Emilio the Butler, and Bobby Boucher, and they are led by himself, Al Pacino. It's very deep.
I liked you guys went above and beyond. I gotta say, Ken, Jack, I want to pick up your movie immediately. Jeff, you went really deep into the Adam Sandler Happy Madison lore, which I think long time fans of that franchise will appreciate. There's a lot of characters that you touched on that are springing back into memory that I wouldn't even considered. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for fan service in there. And the normal fan service in a Happy Madison movie is a donkey pooping all over somebody. This is a real cerebral idea we're pitching here. And I'd like to go over mine because I think there are some you guys touched on, but let's start with Drill Ballin's version. I call it the Fart Vengers. Age of Pooptron, and it starts with our overarching villain is Shooter McGavin, and he's Thanos or however you want to pronounce it. I'm not good at pronouncing everything, and Shooter's gotten into some tough times ever since losing to Happy Gilmore. He's down on his luck and he doesn't have a lot of money. He uncovers the Infinity Stones versions of the Happy Madison universe, which are key product placement points. The first Infinity Stone is the Dunkachino Stone from Jack and Jill. The second one is the Subway Stone from Happy Gilmore. The third stone is the Kmart Stone from Grown Ups 2. The fourth stone is the Popeyes Stone from Little Nicky. The fifth one is the Sony, which is literally all of his movies have Sony products in them. And then the last one is KFC from Grown Ups, which competes with the Popeyes Stone from Little Nicky. Because there really is no loyalty talking about product placement in the Happy Madison universe. So he's out to get these stones to recover his money, which he had lost. Paul Crewe is our Nick Fury. Paul Crewe was Adam Sandler's character from The Longest Yard. And because he assembled that team, I thought he would be good here. Captain America, his character is played by Happy Gilmore because he is the direct good guy to Shooter McGavin. So I think they would have the most struggle. So Happy Gilmore would be the leader here. Billy Madison, being rich now and having a lot of money, is Iron Man. He's our Tony Stark character because he's able to fund this whole venture. And Pepper Potts is Veronica Vaughn to kind of keep that love story going in the lore here. It's a rich tapestry. We're having a lot of callbacks here. Hulk is Adam Sandler's character from Anger Management just because his character was angry. Guys, I mean, that's as much characterization you're going to get here out of him. Thor is his character from Click because the remote is his hammer. Joe Dirt is Hawkeye because I can see him firing a bow with that mullet and because he has a lot of wisecracks. And then again, Black Widow is Jill from Jack and Jill because that is the only female character I can remember Adam Sandler playing. So Adam Sandler would be playing all these roles of the six Avengers. Then to top it off, you have Paul Blart come in and serve as the Spider-Man character to help out in the Fart Avengers. Paul Blart is still trying to get a grasp on his skills, and the Fart Avengers, Age of Pooptron, is about his struggle to tie them together. So the movie opens up with Paul Crewe finding Happy Gilmore working at a driving range called Fart Range. He lost all his money and his grandmother just died at 115 years old. He's real despondent. And the rest of that, I haven't really written out. We can kind of see where it goes. But I assure you that my idea is not as good as Ken Jack's because I do not have a penis key or cat butthole key or whatever we mentioned. But I think the strength behind my pitch is the Infinity Stones, which are the product placement tie-ins, yeah, which always serve as secondary characters in movies in the Happy Gilmore Madison cinematic universe.
I like that a lot. The one suggestion I would have is instead of Thanos, have maybe Klanos, and then you could have a Clash of Clans kind of tie-in, considering they have an infinitesimal amount of money to put towards marketing, apparently.
I think that's great. And the way you tie that in is my secondary villains are the entire O'Doyle family.
Wait, so didn't they die?
The O'Doyle? Oh, they died. Yeah, they fell off the cliff. Unless they came back to life.
That's not canon. they always say, unless in the Happy Madison cinematic universe, unless you see the death on screen, you can never really assume that the character's dead.
A very good point.
So I personally don't, I've spent 20 years thinking about this. I don't believe the O'Doyle family's dead. I would have to say, though, that I like Ken Jack's idea, and I think we should workshop that a little more. Yeah. Mine is a little, it's in its infancy.
I definitely want to incorporate, if we were to go with mine and augment it, I definitely want your corporate stones idea. Corporate, like, product
now,
placement stones.
Here's my question. The Infinity Stones, is it sponsored by the Infinity Car Company?
Ooh. Depends on how much they're willing to pay. Or else we might have to title them the Fart Stones. Now, in all of our movies, we talked about this. The one thing they all have in common is a Rob Schneider character. Mm. Which character is Rob Schneider? Is he the you can do it guy, or is he the guy who has the donkey who poops on everyone?
So, well, the "you can do it" guy seems a lot like Agent Coulson in the Avengers, the guy that kind of encourages everybody.
Yes.
So that might work, though I will say Burrow the Diarrhea Donkey from Ridiculous Six is a pretty good weapon.
That's true. Biological warfare. That's like kind of has a place in most of the, what do you call it, Marvel Universe films. Yeah.
One thing I forgot to mention that might sell this idea. Shooter McGavin, he has henchmen. And his henchmen can only be killed by getting kicked in the dick.
That's wow.
They're perfectly tying it back in. I love that.
Or their head getting farted on.
Well, that's where the donkey might come in. The donkey can kill the henchmen.
They're like the White Walkers. You know, dragon glass is a fart bubble. And chopping off their head or setting them on fire is getting kicked on the dick.
I love that. That will be part of a Sandlerverse film very, very soon.
He hasn't made a movie above a 20 since 2012 on Rotten Tomatoes.
What was the worst score? What was the zero?
The zeros were Joe Dirt 2, Beautiful Loser.
Oh, well, that was a direct-to-Netflix movie too, right?
Or it was, So technically one being released. And I thought Jack and Jill had a zero, so I'm shocked by that. Jack and Jill was the 3. The Ridiculous Six has a zero, but that was Netflix as well. The movie one with a zero was Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star.
That was a Nick Swartzen joint, right?
That was the one with him having a small dick. So,
I thought Punch Drunk Love was pretty good, but then he did another movie called Rain Over Me, and I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah,
but
I know. Right?
Did he just give up on that? Was he? There's just not enough money for me here, and just left it and went to go make the Fart Avengers 8.
It was that was the 9/11 one, right? I think.
I don't know.
For me,
I didn't see it. I just remember seeing the previews, and you know, Don Cheadle was in it. That was when Don Cheadle was super hot. I think Don Cheadle's great, but Adam Sandler was playing a character, I think, who was going through some grief over losing his family in 9/11.
There's
like
my
that.
Tie back to my Adam Sandler as Iron Man role, because now we have Don Cheadle as his Captain Rhodes yet again.
Oh my God.
Everything connects again. It's a big web of lies where everything
it rhymes.
Sandler.
Yeah. And then there are a few movies in the 90s that weren't that bad that aren't Happy Madison Productions. Bulletproof with Damon Wayans, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it was Damon Wayans, where he played the convict and Wayans was trying to transport him. I thought that was okay. And the other one was, I'm pulling up my list here. There's so many of them, you have to go by a list. Airheads, which probably was pretty bad, but I remember enjoying it just for Brendan Fraser.
Arcane, he needs a separate podcast.
Just a reminder, as we talk about Brendan Fraser, Trill, you want him casted in episode 9?
I want him as a background character in episode 9. I want him. Someone did a Photoshop of him wearing like in a First Order uniform. Was it you, Jeff?
Yeah,
it was you. Yes, sorry. Someone did that. Someone made the funny. I'm not going to give him credit. He looked so good. He looked so in place. He looked happy to be cast. Just get the man some work. Come on.
He deserves it.
We need to do like a full timeline for Brendan Fraser at some point.
He'll be cast as like Jeff Skywalker, Luke's long lost brother.
His like stepbrother that lives like halfway across the universe.
He's living with him on Octo.
Oh no, some fresh Jawa juice squeezed by Brendan Fraser.
All right, so we successfully shit on Adam Sandler's career. I do like his early work. Yeah, come on, discuss. I like his early work, and I will say that. I like Billy Madison. I like Happy Gilmore. I like Big Daddy, but that's kind of where I draw the line.
He's self-aware, which is nice. He knows what he's doing. He's making money. You can't fault him for it. But at the same time, 3 guys can get on a podcast and create an entire universe out of his characters simultaneously making fart and poop jokes.
My only prerequisite for him coming on is he needs to come in studio and he needs to be wearing his red carpet attire of triple XL like jean shorts and like a triple size polo. That is my only prerequisite for him coming on to discuss.
So Adam Sandler, if you're out there listening, come join us next week, week 35 of the movie season. Got out It, Home Again, The Good Catholic, Gun Shy, and of course the movie we're all waiting for, 9/11 with Charlie Sheen and Whoopi Goldberg. which I still can't believe is a real movie, but it is coming out.
They really went for it with the name of the movie. The other movie
they did
were United 93, and which was a good movie. And then the other one with Nick Cage was World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And 10 years later, they just went ahead and named it 9/11.
And didn't bury the lead.
From the trailers, here's the best part. The movie looks like it takes place inside an elevator.
Oh, I believe it does.
So you have Charlie Sheen's character inside an elevator, and then you have Whoopi Goldberg working at dispatch, an emergency dispatch. So they spent like $11 on this movie.
That's a huge budget. I think they might make it back, but I'm still not totally sure. Is that the one we're most looking forward to here? I'm going to have to go with It out of the lineup coming out this week. What about you guys?
I want to see this 9/11 motherfucker. I want to see Whoopi Goldberg make me cry about 9/11.
EGOT winner, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, she's an EGOTer. That's true.
Yeah, I'm with Ken Jack. As you've seen by this podcast, I don't really do good movies. It's not my thing. I'd rather watch and suffer through bad movies.
Well, we might think the 9/11 movie might be bad. It won't be Transformers Last Night, which we will be talking about, among other things, next week. So listeners, go out there, watch Transformers, get ready to review it alongside us. For Ken Jack and Trill Ball, this is Jeff Lowe. This has been Lights Camera Podcast. We will see you next week.
Dreamt one morning that I woke up to see all the pepperoni pizza was looking at me. It screamed, "Why do you burn me and serve me up cold?" I said, "I got the spatula, just do what you're told." Then the liver and onion started joining the fight, and the chocolate pudding pushed me with all its might. And a chop suey slapped me and it kicked me in the head. It's called revenge lunch, lady, said the garlic bread. I said, what did I do?
Welcome to our Lights, Camera, Pod post-credit scene. A little Marvel action up in here. Got a little extra thing for you guys. We're talking Force Friday today. The first day that you could buy Last Jedi merchandise was this past Friday. I say merchandise like I don't just mean toys, because that's really what I mean. The first day was this past Friday. Trill, your quest for a certain product ended today.
Yes, that's correct, Jeff. I have been trying to find a Luke Skywalker Funko Pop. I've been going to every Target in my local area, and they've been fully stocked with C-3POs, Snokes, Praetorian Guards, all the shit you do not want. And all I wanted was a Luke Skywalker. Went to multiple Targets, and finally I just gave up and went into Toys R Us. And you know you hit a low point when you're a 30-plus-year-old man walking by yourself into a Toys R Us to buy a vinyl bobblehead.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing, is that Force Friday is all about the hunt. It's about finding the right thing. I know you were pissed that you kept finding Snoke Funko Pops and not Luke Skywalker.
Well, it's a flashback to the good old days of the Phantom Menace when they blasted all the merchandise out and the shelves were just aligned with the Watto action figures and Newt Gunray and Boss Nass, and you couldn't find a nice Qui-Gon Jinn to save your life. I will say, though, toys have come a long way in the last 20 years. The shit they had there was sick. There was a $150 lightsaber set. They sold separately, but one was, I think, Rey's lightsaber, and the other one was Kylo Ren's lightsaber. The shit was in just amazing packaging, looked heavy, looked solid. Back in the day when I would really want a lightsaber toy, you had to beg your dad to make one, and then what you got was like a dowel rod with some fucking metal on the end and some shit and got splinters. Yep. It was a nunchuck without another nunchuck on it.
What do you call it, lightsaber nunchucks? Actually, I don't think that would work. Now that I'm thinking about it from a technical aspect,
you can make it work. I mean, who cares? Just
I think the Praetorian Guards have some sort of weird lightsaber defense mechanism. Yeah. They all have different weapons, and they have what looks like glowing red things on them. So you could probably get something similar. One of them, actually, the Funko Pop for the Praetorian Guard has a long, like, I'm trying to describe it over audio here. It looks like almost like a Indiana Jones whip. So the nunchucks thing's not that far off.
It'd be cool if it were a whip that kind of snapped into place. And so it was like one hard type stick. And then they snapped it and it became this lightsaber whip. Be kind of cool. With little like plated shields on it.
Yeah, I think improving the weapons here, and we saw with like technology, you know, a BB-8 being one of them. There's a lot of things they can expand here. My story is related to not finding a product. I found what I wanted, but these two men who were like cookie cutter stereotyped Star Wars nerds in their mid to late 50s, maybe a little older. One of them actually, I heard them calling their family member asking to transfer more money into their account and they'll pay them back another time because they needed to get all their toys. They were furious with the manager at Toys R Us in Times Square at 1:30 in the morning because there were no Luke Skywalker Hasbro action figures. And they were screaming at the manager saying, somebody bought more than one. You said there was a limit. There's no limit. Where's the Luke? Where's the Luke? It reminded me of, have you guys seen Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Yes.
Why do you have to ask that shit? That's a fucking classic.
It is one of my traditions before Christmas is watching that movie when I wake up in the morning.
Turbo Man.
It's Turbo time. And he even says, this is on a tangent, he even says out in the crowd as Turbo Man, Jamie, who actually, wow, connected to Star Wars, Jamie is Anakin Skywalker.
Jake Lloyd, man.
Jake Lloyd. He yells, Jamie, and he's like, he knows my name. Yeah, no shit. You can't tell by the accent. That's your dad up there. But it reminds me of that movie when they ask the two store workers who, when Arnold's character asks, do you have any more Turbo Man dolls? And they go, no, but we have more of his fellow sidekick, Booster. That's basically what happened in Toys R Us with me, is that they're like, well, we don't have any Luke Skywalkers, but we have General Hux. We have more General Hux characters. They were not having any of that shit. Those guys wanted Luke, and they were pissed. They walked around very angry the rest of the time I was there because they had no more Luke Skywalkers.
And it makes sense, though, because this is a lot of the Star Wars releases, we just get the same action figure over and over. R2-D2 for every movie. Have the same mold, fill out the same character. 3PO, right? They created a red arm specifically to create new merch for him to get people. Exactly. There's no other. They said, like, oh, you can find out why he has a red arm in another story. But we know why you did that. We know.
That's what they did. I had 3PO at the checkout counter. And then it dawned on me how stupid it was to have another gold C-3PO action figure. So I put it back. I passed on 3PO.
Did they ever make an action figure of him like in a bag, like in Empire Strikes Back? Just all his
I am currently looking at it on my shelf right
yes.
now.
Yes, I thought I had like made that up. Okay, guys, I need to describe to you what's happening. Jeff is leaving his computer chair for the first time today. He is pulling down from his shelf a Star Wars action figure. This is the Power of the Force. It is C-3PO. Oh, it includes a freeze frame action slide. It is him with a couple of his appendages in a bag with a new pull apart feature. So yes, I am not making this up. This action figure does exist. Did you know that there was a, there's like a Luke Skywalker with an error on it or something like that. That's worth thousands of dollars.
Well, there's like, actually funny you say that. There's a new Luke Skywalker that has his eye. His eye is lowered down to his nose. Mark Hamill was tweeting about it. Like he has a droopy eye that like goes down half of his face.
He's like sloth.
I wish that was the one that the nerds in Toys R Us got.
This action figure just confirms that Luke is Snoke.
So one of the funnier things about the toy universe in Star Wars is some of the figures that are somewhat useless, some would say. So we have a small list, and I'm going to go through a couple that we have of just figures that there's no reason anybody should want. So there's the Rancor Keeper, the guy who guarded the Rancor in Jabba's palace. And I feel like maybe if he came with an actual Rancor, it would make sense or something, but I just don't get it.
He's thick as fuck, though.
He has like the Alex Jones body. He has like the neurotropics brain force, like pure meat slab chest.
Do you think a Rancor is behind these gates? What do you think made him this mad?
There's also R5-D4, who we learned in our Star Wars podcast is actually force sensitive and helped R2-D2 get linked to Luke.
My favorite Star Wars theory. And remember, in R5-D4, is it the actual name is Skippy the Jedi robot.
What else? Oh, and then my personal favorite, I think, is Elan Sleazebagano. He's the guy who sells the death sticks to Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones. And he comes complete with like a handset of death sticks and a small bar. Who's that? Which one is your guy's favorite?
You want to buy some death sticks? There's a couple more on this. We have a list. Gizmodo, shout to them. They came up with a list. There's a few on here that I like. Dexter Jester. Jetster is my favorite character in the Star Wars universe. The diner owner. There's a few more. Any Aunt Beru action figure makes me laugh. Yeah. But there's – so my favorite is not on here. But I will say there's one up on top. Jocasta Nu, who is the old woman from Attack of the Clones. And she's the one that tells Obi-Wan that Kamino is not an actual planet. She's actually a bitch to Obi-Wan. Can we just go back to that movie?
She is.
Where she's like, if it's not in the database, it's not there. Well, you know what? If you would have been more helpful, he might have been able to get there quicker and you wouldn't have died a gruesome death.
If she had the constellations on a secure server for her emails, then maybe Count Dooku wouldn't have hacked into it.
She's a favorite of mine, but my favorite is not on here, and that is Ahmed Best's character from Attack of the Clones. And I'm not talking Jar Jar Binks, okay? Because he was actually in another – he played another role. At the nightclub scene where they're chasing after the character – I don't know, Zam? Whatever. It's the changeling one.
Yeah,
the changeling. Remember Obi-Wan and Anakin kill that changeling? There's two famous Star Wars actors in that scene. Anthony Daniels is one of them, the guy that plays C-3PO. He's as himself. And Ahmed Best, who plays – Jar Jar Binks is in that scene as a character named Ahmed Beck. And there's actually an action figure for Ahmed Beck. And I just purchased it on eBay for $7.
Oh my God.
So do you think these come from collections for people who had bought these, like thinking they would have value at some point in the future, or are they just getting them from like yard sales? Because that's pretty disappointing to hold on to an action figure for 12, 15 years and only get $7 in 2017 currency for it.
Do you even cover up your expenses for it, like the shipping?
That's a good question. I have yet to sell action figures on eBay, but I'm sure I'll get to that point in my life.
I don't know how much – do you remember – so you're a little older than us, Trill. You probably purchased toys with your own money and not your parents. My parents always bought mine when I was a kid, so yeah. I don't actually remember how much they cost in store.
They're probably more now. I remember the Phantom Menace ones costing, I think, $6.99. I used to buy them at Meijer in Indianapolis. And I bought all the Phantom Menace ones, and then that I bought into the hype, and then the movie ended up sucking, and so I didn't go back for the Clone Wars ones, Attack of the Clones. I can't even say the name of the stupid movie. But yeah, what I think they've done since, though, is they used to just have one main line of action figures, and then they used to have like the 12-inch dolls. And I think now, right, they have a cheaper line of action figures, which are still around the $7 price point. But then they have the black label or black series action figures, which have more articulation and are a little more expensive. So I think there's ones that kind of suck. But yeah, what do we have there? We're looking at.
So I'm holding up the cheaper one. This is like the traditional with the card. If you're listening, you can't see it right now. I'm holding up General Hux, and it's the traditional like card back with a character on the front, and then the small. Probably like six inch action figure. It's not very big.
I gotta say it's bad radio, but I love the pose. I love the pose General Hux is doing in that, like the raised.
He has his fist. He actually has his fist up like he's about to go fight Mayweather. He has like a he has like a title fight type pose.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
the other one you're talking about, they're called the Black Series figures.
Yes,
and they're a little taller. I think those are actually like 6 inches or taller. I have one right now holding up of Admiral Thrawn.
Thrawn's pretty dope. I wish they would make him like an important character in the new movies, or like at least a spinoff.
There's gonna be a Thrawn movie. Thrawn is the blue character. He's in Rebels, but he was also in the old Timothy Zahn books. And then there's one more, and I'm gonna hold it up again. This is bad radio, but hey, it's post credit scene. If you stuck around, you know what you're getting. This is the Elite series action figure.
They have an Elite series.
Yeah, the Elite series is about $35-$40, and damn, they're incredible. Every bit of them moves.
And
I would have killed to have these action figures as a kid. I love my toys as a kid. The Power of the Force, they were cool, but they couldn't do. You couldn't really move them much. Like, they even had a hard time like getting in the vehicles you had. These things, I mean, they can do any. You could do some weird shit with these toys.
I never bought the dolls because they were kind of creepy. Honestly, they always had those Ken doll like faces, and you know, what are you gonna do with dolls? The action figures, you could set up like an intricate. They would stand on their own and you can set up a scene and play with them, but I just never got into the big ones. I got to say, though, that it is impressive how they've maintained the price point on the cheaper action figures, because they, I mean, maybe $5 to $6 to $7 like 10 to 15 years ago. And I don't think they're much more than that now, but they make up for it with the collectors with $35 ones, I guess.
Yeah. And it was $9 for the Last Jedi ones on Friday. But then again, the nice one, it's $40. So it's a big difference.
Did they have a Luke one, like a $40 Luke one?
Yes, which was pretty cool. I was definitely most psyched. That was the one that people – I went to the Disney store before I went to Toys R Us.
Yeah.
People stormed the Elite action figure section because that was the only one they had it at the Disney store. They have hold on.
How many people do you think went to go buy that thinking that would be a lightsaber, like his green lightsaber in there?
Can I buy like a Jar Jar Binks waifu pillow somewhere? Is that available for purchase?
Well, there was the worst Star Wars toy of all time. Well, there's two that people consider the worst. One is a C-3PO tape dispenser where the tape comes out of his crotch. And then there's a Jar Jar Binks lollipop where it's his tongue. So you're sucking on his tongue. It looks like you're making out with Jar Jar as you do the
Jar Jar.
I remember that. I think I had one. We also should go. We should go to a action figure convention. And just fucking – so speaking of conventions, I was traveling on business and I went to a hotel in Tampa, Florida, very nice hotel, kind of a convention center as well, and then meeting rooms and whatnot. And they were just getting out of a furry convention. So there had been a furry convention on, I think, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I was checking in on Monday and all the furries were checking out. Very nice people, nothing like that. I get to my room. And I'm fucking tired. Every time I travel, I have to take a nap. So I strip down to my boxers because I'm napping in my boxers. I pull down the bed and I lay down the bed. And I start to think like, well, am I sweating because my back is wet? Or is it hot in here? And I fucking check and the bed was just soaked with piss. I smelled it. I put my nose down to the bed and it had that, you know, that weird, what is that, ammonia smell? You know, proper hydration does not result, but if you're improperly hydrated, you get that stinky piss. It was a stinky piss smell. So I laid in piss and I didn't know what to do. So I fucking threw my boxers off, tossed them in the trash and just jumped in the shower and turned on the hottest water I could. And I went down to the receptionist and I get in line and there was a line next over and the lady kind of said, "Hey, you know, what's your issue?" And they're like, five people behind me. And I'm like, well, I can't really talk about it here. And she's like, no, it's okay. And I go, well, someone pissed in my bed. And she was like, okay. And they pulled me into their office to discuss it because they didn't want the people behind us hearing it. But I had laid down someone else's piss and it was fucked up. So every time I hear these conventions and these Star Wars conventions, I'm like, I was worried. Like, people get down some freaky piss shit on the bed and I had to lay in their piss again because that's not a life I'm going back to.